Mr. Morell.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, may it please the court, Frank Morell appearing for Mr. Javier Baeza-Castro. Your Honor, in our initial paperwork in this matter, the brief that we submitted, we listed four different issues. Of course, issue number one has been dealt with in the decision of Rodriguez-Gamboa by this court, in that there are no, except for optical isomers, there are no geometric isomers in methamphetamine. And that was our first issue. The second issue, Your Honor, is basically one in which has not been decided by this court, and I'm not aware of any court in California. Essentially, it is one where we ask the court to consider the mens rea as related to the actus reus. There is a saying in Latin, if I may indulge, Your Honor, that basically says, actus non facit reum nisi mens sit rea, which means basically a person is not guilty of an act unless the mind be guilty. In this case, Your Honor, we have an offense under 11352 of California statute. The mens rea required for that statute by the state court is simply that the defendant had committed the act, and the burden is on the government to prove that he intended to commit the act, that he had the guilty intent, the guilty mind.
Counsel, I want to make sure I understand your position clearly, and I'm not sure I do, but I can tell you this. You know your Latin so much better than I remember it, and I had, I think, 40 years of it. So I commend you for that. I wish I remembered it that well. Is it your position here that the government needs to prove that an individual knows that the meth that he possesses is a controlled substance, both under federal law and California law? That's the way I was reading the brief, but maybe I'm misreading.
Well, under federal law, certainly, and there is a reason for that, and it's because this.
But this is a state. This was a state prosecution. This is state prosecution, right?
Correct. For methamphetamine, 26.5 grams or something to that effect. To go on, Your Honor, basically, the mens rea requirement in this case refers to the federal CSA, Section 802. Mm-hmm. The person has to have knowledge that the substance that he was carrying or distributing is one which is prohibited under the federal CSA, period.
So it could be any controlled substance under the CSA, right?
Any controlled substance under the CSA, correct. But then we have to do the categorical approach as to that substance. Now, I said it, California has never done this. This Ninth Circuit has never done it. However, there is a case out of the Fifth Circuit, and that is Sarmiento versus Holder. In that case, and if I may, the site is 742 Fed 3rd, 624, 2014. In that case, we had a gentleman from Mexico who had pled to an offense, a drug offense, I believe it was cocaine, in Florida. And he went on doing his thing, and one day he goes to Mexico, and upon his return from Mexico, he gets stopped and he gets put for removal proceedings. Since he was a lawful permanent resident, he was given a hearing as opposed to simply being excluded from the country at the time. The court in that case decided that the mens rea requirement was required because the court in Florida required the person to prove that he did not know, as opposed to the government having to prove that he did not know. So that was the problem with that. That's what we don't have in this case, Your Honor. But nevertheless, in this case, we have the issue of his knowledge that what he did was an offense against the federal CSA, the federal drug laws.
Right. Could I just back you up a little bit before your time runs out? I do have a sort of a preliminary question. I kind of understand your argument here, what you're making on this, on the categorical approach, but I want to go back just a little bit. The government argues very forcefully that this issue was never raised before the board in this instant proceeding, and therefore it's unexhausted. Now, I took a careful look at the brief that was submitted to the BIA from the IJ's decision that we're dealing with, and I didn't see this argument in that brief. So could you help me?
No, the court is correct. That argument was not made at the time. I concur. I agree with you. Although I think that this...
It's just unexhausted. How could we even consider the merits of your argument? The board didn't get to consider it. The board didn't get to address it.
No, that's correct. Then my request of this board would be to remand the case for consideration.
Well, we can't just go... we can't just go around, remanding cases because we think there might be a potential argument.
Well, but you can also rule for the first time on a case involving law or involving the rights.
But if it's not exhausted, we don't have jurisdiction. Yeah. This is the problem. So I have the same question that Judge Pius does, which is how do we reach your argument if it hasn't been presented to the board?
Yeah, very well. Then let me go to the second point, the second issue.
So your answer is it's unexhausted.
Correct.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Your Honor, the last issue in this case was really that the BIA should have reviewed de novo the denial on the 248A, that is the statute giving the remedy to a lawful permanent resident. And basically, the BIA did not examine this case in accordance with the case law, or its own case law, that is the matter of Marin, 16 INE decision 581, that's 1978. Even though that case dealt with the old 212C, the new equivalent to the 212C is the 240AA, which is a cancellation of removal statute. The BIA did not conduct an element-by-element review of that case. It basically, in this matter, Your Honors, we have a residence by the petitioner in the United States for over 50 years. He is now 62 years old. They did not review that. He's been a permanent resident for 31 years. Evidence of hardship, they didn't even bother reviewing that. All his relatives are in the United States, sons, parents, grandparents, nephews, nieces. There's not a single individual that lives in Mexico. And he is unprepared even to get employment over there. He has no practical ways of getting a job in Mexico. Besides the ties, also he registered for the draft. He basically went for the draft and had intended to apply to be a Marine when he graduated from high school. Unfortunately, he had to go to work before graduating his senior year because his girlfriend got pregnant and he had to go to work. There was tons of proof of rehabilitation, Your Honor, and the court did not consider any of it. It basically adopted the decision by the IJ without reviewing any of this, as it should have done under the code, on the CFRs. But my request would, Your Honor, for the reasons above, to remand the case on either one of those two issues for determination by the BIA.
All right, thank you. You've used up your time, but if you like, I'll give you 2 minutes on rebuttal if you'd like to use that. All right, Mr. Stanton. And you're on mute. There we go.
Okay. May it please the court. As Judge Paez says, we dispute that this court has jurisdiction not only against the challenges to the withholding charges, but also to pretty much every other issue that the petitioner raises in this case. I mean, I apologize for all the flurry of Rule 28J letters, but I did file this brief 3 years ago, so things have happened since then. So
these cases take a while.
But I will point out, though, the 11th Circuit decision that we cited, the Chamu case that rejected the same mens rea.
Let me ask you: if we agree that these most of these arguments are unexhausted, that ends everything, right?
Yeah. But that's actually my point, Your Honor. In the 11th Circuit case, the non-citizen did exhaust his argument. The 11th Circuit opinion shows that he actually made these arguments to the Board of Immigration Appeals, therefore was exhausted. That didn't happen here. So, yes, I agree. That's my point.
There was one question I did have for you. And mainly, you know, this is a very long record in this case. It goes on for years, my goodness. And it took me a while to sort of work my way through it. But so as I understand, after the Ninth Circuit, after this court set aside said that the BIA should have granted a rehearing, what's it called, the motion to reopen, and sent it back and said, you know, consider granting a motion to reopen, and the board did, and then the board transferred the record and remanded the entire proceeding to the IJ. Is that correct? Is that what happened?
Yes, that's what happened. Like, and what the court did, the court granted the first petition because it found that a petitioner was the victim of ineffective assistance of counsel because I've actually lost count. I think Mr. Murrow is the fifth lawyer in this case, but I think second counsel did not afford an adverse decision by the board. He lost the board, and second former counsel didn't tell petitioner about that, and he missed the filing deadline.
Okay, so anyway, it goes back to the IJ, right?
Yes.
Now, could counsel have raised this, the aggregated felony and the relating to a controlled substance argument before the IJ?
He certainly could have, yes. That, and it probably would have been, had he done so, like, he probably would have exhausted the issue. I mean, the Board of Immigration Appeals, or the agency more specifically, may or may not have found that he actually conceded the point when he conceded his removability under the controlled substance charge earlier, but that was lawyer number two as well. So, like, as we said,
is it correct they could have argued, well, we should be relieved of that concession and we could have just raised this whole issue again?
I actually spent some time looking up that exact issue, that when you find an effective assistant counsel, whether everything gets wiped out, all the entire advocacy is just gone, or just that specific point. I did not find an answer.
Right.
So
neither did I. But it seemed to me that he could have raised it. He could have said, you know, we want to be relieved of our concession, and here's why. There's some new developments in the law, or things have changed, or, you know, that counsel was totally ineffective, and we should be relieved, and we should be allowed to argue this. But that none of that happened here. Is that correct? I'm understanding the record correctly. Is that right?
You're exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and as far as I can tell, this court has never addressed that exact issue. But in this particular case, the issue is moot because he never raised the argument.
Right, he never raised anything.
Yeah, never raised anything, except for Mr. Morrell right here. Again, all due respect to Mr. Morrell, very, very capable advocate. I mean, one of the best, but you cannot, like, get raise new arguments that were not exhausted just by getting new counsel on the Court of Appeals. So
notwithstanding the ineffectiveness determination that this court made, and the remand and the reopening that occurred before not only as Judge Pius has pointed out, the IJ, there has been forfeiture of the issue that the petitioner is raising across the board in the long previous procedural history of this case. Is that right?
Well, I mean, with respect to the issues he's raising now, which, I mean, include challenges to the removability, the admissibility of the form I-213, that challenge was never raised to the Board of Immigration Appeals. I mean, he preserved, for exhaustion purposes, he preserved his challenges to the denial of cancellation. So that was exhausted. The problem is the court doesn't have jurisdiction
Understood.
For other reasons. Yes. So I'm prepared to address the merits of those arguments, but we reiterate that the court just doesn't have jurisdiction either for exhaustion or for the discretionary review bar. So, I'm prepared to address the merits, but if this court is satisfied with our jurisdictional arguments, I'm not sure what else there is to say. So, I mean, any questions?
Doesn't look it like there are any more questions. All right. Thank you.
Well, I do have one last question. Okay. This is a very easy question, though. Is it possible, you know, this fellow has been here for an awful long time. Could they ask for some sort of discretionary, prosecutorial discretion to
you could.
Let him remain?
Non-citizens are free to request prosecutorial discretion at any point in the case, whether it's before the Court of Appeals, even after the Court of Appeals has ruled against them, they're free to go talk to DHS to request prosecutorial discretion. If Mr. Beza Castro has not done so yet, I certainly would encourage him to do so. My gut is, given his criminal history, it might be an uphill fight. So, I mean, DHS is less inclined to grant prosecutorial discretion when someone has multiple convictions. But again, it never hurts to try.
Okay.
Never hurts to try.
All right. Thank you. And.
Morell,
you have two minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. To begin with, let me say that prosecutorial discretion has nothing to do with this case because there's an order from the judge deporting the petitioner, respondent in that case, and denying the only remedy that he has under 240A. The only remedy he's got is cancellation of removal. Now, ICE, the officers from ICE have the situation that he will be deported because he's already been deemed to be deportable, and they will simply pick him up, arrest him, and send him to Mexico. There is no prosecutorial discretion. What is the discretion? He's been deported. So that leaving that aside, this is a case I truly believe that the BIA, the Board of Immigration Appeals, did not go further in its analysis of the equities that my client had versus the adverse factors. They did not do analysis of that as they're required under the CFR in this case. And I've already outlined to the court some of those factors. I would request, at the very least, a remand for the BIA to review those factors and compare them to this gentleman and actually grant them, reverse the order of the IJ, granting him cancellation of removal. That is what I'm seeking. Once cancellation removal is granted, he's free. Now, he's had no further problems with the law since the DUI. Nothing. No arrests, no nothing. He's working, he's got a family, nobody in Mexico. And that is, Your Honor, my concluding remark. I thank you very much for listening to me and to consider this case. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Thank you, counsel, both for your arguments this morning. They were helpful. And this case is taken under submission, and we are in recess for the rest of the day.